Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to the jungle. The program is brought to you by Rockin' Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rockin' Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We are scheduled to be joined by Florida State head basketball coach Leonard Hamilton momentarily. Quickly, Romy. We are loyal to BlackBerry as well. Regards, AIM users.
You've got mail.
Geoff and Lincoln. See, the thing about that is we were on AIM until the very last second. We used to chat on AIM as a team until they pulled the plug. And I was dreading that day for so long. So we G-chat now. It's just not the same. And I'm not here to hype AOL at all. But AIM ruled, man. AIM was kind of seamless. It didn't crash all that much. We worked off that pretty effectively. And then you got that one person in the group who's always got to go green. No names mentioned. James Kelly? No, Alvin is green. That's why I don't text you, bro. The whole team is on an iPhone except for Alvy. Yeah, dude. What? I'll be my own man. I'm going to be my own guy. 1-800-636-8686. I want to finish one thought, too, about Rob Manfred and what's going to happen now. You've got other players. Hell, Mike Trout. Mike Trout even is furious about the Astros. So you've got all these other teams. It's not just angry fans. The real problem for baseball is that cheating does work, which leads to another layer. The prospect of opposing pitchers taking matters into their own hands, taking the justice into their own hands, since the commissioner did not do it. Dusty Baker knows this, and he already tried to get out in front of it by raising the prospect of opposing pitchers hitting Astro batters. Manfred said that he's been working on a memo about that as well, and he's got more in mind.
Over the next 3 days, I'm going to meet with all of the managers in Major League Baseball, and the topic that you raise will be one of the things that I intend to address with them. It is simply not appropriate to express whatever frustration you may have by growing out of the Astro situation by putting someone physically at risk by throwing at him. It's right. Just not acceptable.
I think that's the one thing that I agree with the commissioner about. I mean, I'm not going to sit here with a gas can and make it worse. The idea of essentially throwing a rock at a guy 100 miles per hour from 60 feet away because you didn't like something they did is pretty unacceptable. I mean, what they did was wrong, but throwing a baseball at a defenseless batter is worse. It just is. I mean, I understand that opposing players are pissed. I understand that they didn't get what they were looking for in terms of a punishment or discipline. But to enact some sort of retaliation, I mean, throwing at guys is dangerous as hell. If that ball were to slip, right? Or maybe you're not a pitcher who's got the control and the responsibility necessary to throw up and in on somebody. If a ball gets away from a pitcher and smashes somebody in the face, shatters their face, or worse, nobody's better for that. The game's not better for that. You're not better for that. Your team's not better for that. Nobody's better for that. Like, if you feel that you got robbed either as a player or a fan by the 27 Astros, I get that. If you're furious about their response, I get that. If you feel like they're not sorry, they're not contrite, I understand all that. I really do. If you feel like the commissioner did not handle this the right way, I get that. But you cannot take the law into your own hands and then intentionally try to hurt somebody, or hurt somebody seriously, or maybe kill somebody. It's so dangerous. And that's the one thing that I do agree with the commissioner on. You can't condone that. You can't tolerate that. You can't say, oh, that's just the code. They'll police their own. That's Major League Baseball. No matter how angry you are, no matter how badly that situation was handled, no matter how badly the Astros handled their pressers, no matter how badly Jim Crane handled his, you can't take matters into your own hands. Because all it takes is one fastball getting away and dotting some guy, hitting somebody above the shoulders, shattering somebody's face. Justin Turner, however, The Dodgers are getting more and more vocal about this. Justin Turner is not at all happy with what he's seen and what he's heard.
That trophy, which, by the way, is called the Commissioner's Trophy. So for him to devalue it the way he did yesterday is just tells me how out of touch he is with the players in this game. And, you know, at this point, the only thing devaluing that trophy is that it says Commissioner on it. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious what everyone thinks should happen. I
right.
mean, No one in this clubhouse or in this room is asking for a trophy to be handed us by any means. We want to earn it. We want to earn it the right way. We want to, you know, like I said at FanFest, we want to be the last team standing. We want to catch the last out. We want to pop champagne and dogpile on the field. And we want to have the parade in L.A. But at the same time, you know, we understand how difficult it is, you know, to win a World Series. It's hard. Really hard, and it's something that you have to earn. And obviously, you know, as the report showed, as all these guys from their club over there are coming back and apologizing and you know, trying to make amends for it, it's pretty evident to me that it wasn't earned, and it's not.
That's Justin Turner. All right, so more on that a little bit later. As promised, we are joined by the head basketball coach at Florida State. He is the winningest coach in Florida State history. Recipient of 4 National Coach of the Year awards, a 4-time Conference Coach of the Year, led Florida State to back-to-back Sweet 16s for the second time in school history. Florida State is 21-4. They're 11-3 in the ACC. They are number 8 in the AP poll, and they're at home against Pitt tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Leonard Hamilton is back. Leonard, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
Hello, Jim. How are you doing on the West Coast?
Man, I'm so good on the West Coast. Leonard, how about you? You're coming off a win over Syracuse. You're unbeaten at home. You're number 8 in the AP poll. So let me ask you how your life is right now.
You know, it's a grind. I'm enjoying it, trying to get better. We have basically a new team. We have 6 new players that we're trying to incorporate in, and we're still learning and growing. And that's a good thing about this team. We still have a lot of room for improvement. I just hope we can continue to keep winning while we're still getting it together.
All right, so what about that? The fact is, you're number 8 in both polls, as I mentioned, but you said we can still get better. We've got some new players. If you haven't yet fully hit on all cylinders and you're in the top 10, how good can this team be? What's your upside with this group?
Well, to be very honest with you, I think we have good pieces. The full sum of all our parts, I think, makes us, you know, a pretty good basketball team. We don't have anybody on our team that's really playing lights out. We don't have anybody that's really, really playing bad. We do have some guys that need to play totally up to their potential. We're trying to get to that magic level, that elusive mindset where everybody is hitting on all cylinders at the same time, and we haven't come close to that yet, but we've been fortunate enough to win while we're still developing.
Florida State head coach Leonard Hamilton is my guest. At the same time, he did beat Syracuse on Saturday 70-67, and that's a game where M.J. Walker missed a chunk of time because he got 12 stitches in his lip, and then he came back. He was enormous down the stretch. How impressed were you with his toughness and what he did for the team down that stretch?
Jim, I've never seen anything like this, and to be very honest with you, when I look back at it, you know, when you come out off the bench, he played about I think he played about 9 or 10 minutes in the first half, and he sat on the bench the second half until 9 minutes to go in the game with 12 stitches in his mouth. And he went out there and played with absolutely no fear. And when I look back at that, the thought of all the shots that you have to take in order to sew your lip back up with 12 stitches is painful enough, but to have the presence of mind and the toughness and the focus and the will and the desire to go out and will your team to victory In a game that could have gone either way, this says a lot about his character.
You know, it says a lot about his character, but it seems to me also, I mean, that's really important. It says a lot about his character, period. But then it talks about, or it says a lot about the reflection and the embodiment of the culture that you have built in that program, about toughness and sacrificing for each other. How do you find guys, so many guys that are willing to pay that price and be there for each other?
Well, we do have a really good culture. This bunch really cheers for one another. They enjoy hanging out with each other. They really, really care about one another, and we've been void of a lot of that me stuff that goes on. The challenge for us is to find a way to shut out all the noise that comes from so many different places. A lot of times it's people who care about the guys who trying to tell their players how to their relationships, how to get to a place where they've never been themselves. So we just try to work hard at being honest. with our approach, and try not to mislead anyone. I think that the way we play is very challenging for these guys to play long minutes without getting a rest, and they seem to have bought in playing to each other and for each other.
And that's why depth is so important, because you are pretty demanding in that regard. Leonard Hamilton's my guest. You know, Leonard, one of the topics or themes that's come up quite a bit on the show lately is coaches saying that I've only got a few hours a day with the guys. So what's so important is if they're going to spend 20, 22, 23 hours away from us, it's what they're doing at that time that we need to make sure they're dialed in for those 2 hours when we do have them. So if you're trying to get rid of all that noise, what's the conversation you have with your players? What should they listen to, and what are you telling them to block out?
Well, Jim, let me be very honest with you. It's one of the areas that concern me about how we legislate rules that govern what goes on with our young people. We have five different committees, and half the committees you have people working on them who have never really coached, who've never recruited, who've never been in the trenches with kids under these circumstances. But we have so many people making rules that they really have not been involved in the situation. The coaches really don't. We have some voice, but not really. And we have things that go on that I read about them in the paper. You know, I find out that something's going on or rules being changed. You know, we're not really focused on sometimes the reality of the situation. You know, all the football coaches get together at one time during the year, and they kind of go over what they think is best for their game. But we don't have a meeting that requires all the head basketball coaches to be in one place in order to come up with situations that's better, that's the best for our game. So we have a lot of rules and a lot of misunderstandings in how we should govern ourselves, and the use of time seems to be one of them.
Leonard Hamilton's my guest. All right, so since the game took place during the All-Star weekend, a number of former players who were in the NBA came back to campus. What's that like? Like, what's it mean to you and the program when players do come back and they support the current guys?
Wow, that was amazing to have Chris Camargi and Fiondu Kamengele and Terrence Mann and Phil Kofor and Isaiah Swan and, Dwayne Bacon and then Malik Beasley is coming in for the game tomorrow. I was overwhelmed with these guys. When they have time off, they want to come and hang out in Tallahassee and support our program. That just says a little bit about the culture that we're building and the relationships that we have, not only with our present players, but with our former players. And so it's building. We have a little ways to go, but it's moving in the right direction.
Says something about the coach, too. Now, that win moved you into the top five all time for ACC wins. I know you're not going to make it about yourself. You never have. But what's that number represent to you?
Well, it represents that I've had great staff, Stan Jones, Carl Charlton Young, Steve Smith, guys who have been with me. Mike Bradley been with me over 20 years. Stan Jones been with me close to 23, 24 years. Charlton Young, I recruited out of high school when he turned me down and went to Georgia Southern. I've had a long relationship with him, and I've known Steve Smith forever. We have a great staff, guys who believe in doing things as a staff, and you know, so it works well when you have guys on your staff that have your back. And we have a system, and it feels like we are really, really coming together, and we need it because we're in the toughest basketball conference ever assembled in the history of college basketball, where 70% of all the games are decided by 4 points or less. So you need to have a tight unit that's all working together, and my staff does that.
Leonard Hamilton joins us for a few more moments. You know, I saw last month he spent some time with Joe B. Hall. What's that like when the two of you get together, and what kind of memories come up?
Man, that was one of the highlights of the year for me, to be able to sit there in the lobby of the Marriott and reminisce about the good old days and tell stories and just kind of relive some of those moments that we enjoyed together. It was very refreshing and rewarding, and I can't tell you how much it meant to me for him to come out and hang out with me for a little while. And let's, you know, he's a great guy. He meant an awful lot to me. He gave me a chance to be his assistant coach when I was 26 years old. And I worked my family off to try to show him how much I appreciated it. And he was, it was just a wonderful experience. And gosh, I'm going to try to get by to holler at the old fella as much as I can.
Florida State 21-4, 11-3 in conference play. They are number 8 in the AP poll, and they've got a big win tomorrow night. They're at home against Pitt, 8 p.m. Eastern. He's a friend of the program, Leonard Hamilton. Leonard, great to have you back. Thank you so much. Good luck tomorrow night.
Thank you.
Leonard Hamilton, winningest coach in Florida State history and a recipient of 4 National Coach of the Year awards. All right, then, we will come back. We've done the interviews today. I have an ATP that I need still yet. Talk some more about the Astros. Got an update on the XFL. I should check in with Adam Hawk. His guy finished DFL at Riviera.
Happens to us all.
Not bad. Not that bad, though, generally. Clones, what do we want when we are craving protein and we need some more energy? I can answer that by telling you what it is we do not want. We don't want an energy drink. We don't want a sugary snack. We don't want another bar. We want beef. So where is the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not Ike's jerky. It's not shriveled, dry, and tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. That way it's tender and tasty. It's not rough. So what makes it so good? It's the family behind it, right? A 50-year-old family business known for its relentless commitment to quality. They take their smoked beef extremely seriously. It's a family business that cares a lot. Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in 4 great flavors. It satisfies all your cravings. It's quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Bones are still a topic. Wells in 360 says, thanks to the ringtone during that interview, we know that Leonard Hamilton is Team iPhone. We did hear that. He made it go away. He handled that like a champ. Romy, did you say black cherry? No law when you drink the claw. Regards, White Claw Tools. I said blackberry, not black cherry. Blackberry. Blackberry phones. Hey, Rome, those baseball players have been punished enough already. Signed OJ, missing out on a bunch of golf because of his trial. All right, so really quickly, Alvin, Rob Manfred said, look, these guys have already been punished. They've paid a price. And I'm not exactly sure what price the commissioner is speaking of. He talks about how, yeah, if you look at the way they look and sound and the way they're carrying themselves, man, they've been through a lot. They really have been through a lot. Just listen to those players when they're asked about it.
I understand people's desire to have the players pay a price for what went on here. I think if you watch the players, watch their faces when they have to deal with this issue publicly, they have paid a price. To think that they're skipping down the road into spring training happy, that's just a mischaracterization of where we are.
How is that a mischaracterization? And exactly what is that price? And why are you trying to sell that? Who do you think is going to buy that? Who do you think is going to believe that? They've paid a price? Again, they denied it initially. They only admitted it when they were confronted with the evidence of it. And again, there's this case of being sorry or being sorry that you're in this position. Fact of the matter is they didn't pay a price. You could argue that the manager did. You could argue that the general manager did. The organization had to pay $5 million, which is walk-around money for a franchise like that. But they didn't pay a price. But they're going to. They're going to pay a different price once they start to play real games. Because there's going to be a lot of heat and a lot of hate and a lot of anger everywhere they go. And people are going to just be waiting for them. But even then, that's not discipline or punishment from Major League Baseball. And again, if you joined us late, Manfred's argument was we had to have an investigation. The investigation does not work with the players or without the players. The players were not going to participate in the investigation unless we promised them that nothing would happen to them. So that's how we did this. And we got our investigation, and we were able to extract our pound of flesh from the manager and the general manager, and we got some money from the franchise, but the players, they're fine. Even though the players were the ones who benefited, and the players were the ones who cheated. So Manfred is saying it's a mischaracterization to say that they haven't paid a price. All right, why don't we check in on their peers? Why don't we see how the people they're going up against, how they feel? We know how the Dodgers feel. They're pissed. They feel like they had a championship ripped from them. But what about the others? What about some of the other players that didn't go up against them directly or didn't have a championship taken from them? You want to know how bad it is? It's so bad that even Mike Trout let loose. And you know Mike. Mike's not about getting into matters like that. Mike Trout never says anything controversial or even anything edgy. He's just a good dude who just wants to play the game. He doesn't like what he's seeing.
Tough, you know, they cheated. You know, just I don't agree with the punishments. You know, the player's not, you know, getting anything. You know, there was a player-driven, you know, thing. You know, it sucks, too, because, you know, like you said, a guy's career has been affected. A lot of people, you know, lost jobs. It was tough. You know, it would be me going up to the plate knowing what's coming. It would be pretty fun up there. So, you know, it's just, like I said, it's a lot of guys lost respect for some of the guys. And, you know, it seems like every day something new comes out. So
themselves.
Just trying to explain what happened. You know, you read a lot of stuff in the paper. And, you know, once you read something, a lot of people jump to that conclusion. But sometimes it's right. Sometimes it's false. You know, it's like I said, it was a tough off season to see that as a baseball player. And you know, you just hope Major League Baseball cleans it up, and we play you know, good baseball from here on out. If you know,
I agree with everything he just said. When was the last time you heard a soundbite from Mike Trout? When was the last time you heard an extended soundbite from Mike Trout, or a pointed soundbite from Mike Trout? And I'm not being critical at all. He's just a really good guy. I've seen Mike Trout like on the field at games, Angel games, and he's so good with the kids. He has time for everybody, plays the game the right ways, like our generation's Mickey Mantle, only better. But he's not a guy looking for cameras or microphones or a platform to express himself. He's just there to get his work in, be a good teammate, put up numbers, and win games. Everybody should be like that. But man, I've never heard him like that publicly. He lost respect. For Mike Trout to say we lost or I lost respect for a lot of those guys, it's a damning allegation or a damning thing to say. That's a real indictment. And he's speaking for a lot of people. As I mentioned, when I had the interview with Leonard Hamilton, I cut the very end of the Justin Turner soundbite. And I don't think any of the Dodgers want to win a world championship like that. You know, I made the point earlier that the commissioner could not get the players to admit anything and still have his investigation. So he decided to, all right, we're going to have a little talk right here, and we'll have an investigation, but none of you will be punished. So I don't think any Dodger wants to win a world championship like that. They want a chance to win a world championship on a level playing field where the other team didn't cheat. And then if they weren't good enough, then you accept that and the chips fall where they may. I don't think any Dodger player wants that trophy or, quote, the medal this way. They don't want to get it after the fact because the other guy cheated, and they don't want to plan a parade that way. Nobody's going to enjoy that. They don't want that. However, I made the point that although I don't think Major League Baseball is going to do that, if they did do that and they didn't award the trophy to anybody, say they just ripped it from the Astros but didn't give it to the Dodgers, but ripped it from the Astros, then at least the fans and opposing players would think that something had been done. They didn't get away with it. Manfred's trying to make the argument that they're not getting away with anything, that people will always see that team the way they see that team. I'm here to tell you that's not good enough for the fans. The fans won't see it that way, and neither will the opposition. Mike Trout doesn't sound like he sees it that way. Justin Turner doesn't see it that way. Phil Hughes, who doesn't play anymore, doesn't see it that way. A lot of guys don't see it that way. In other words, this notion of the imaginary asterisk, that's not going to be enough for most people. All right, when we return, you can get in on that topic if you want. Phone lines are open. You know the number. I I do need to check in with Adam Hawk and see how his weekend went. Just know I haven't discussed it with him, so it might be kind of a waste of time, or maybe it won't be. I need to hear from him how he felt though when his idol came in DFL. Me, I thought it was hilarious. And the reason for that, I'm not rooting against Tiger, but because I bet on him to win and he came in dead freaking last, that to me was pretty funny. That tells you how much I know. Also, the ATP is coming up. If I can, I've got thoughts on the XFL Week 2. Here is a sports update from... ATP on a Monday. You asked the question, I answered. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Scott in Cincinnati writes, Rome, my wife is one of those people that makes a huge deal out of Valentine's Day. It is a production. She expects flowers, chocolates, dinner, a date, and a gift. It's like a second birthday. How is Janet on February 14th? Easy, high maintenance, somewhere in the middle? What did you guys do over the weekend? Scott in Cincinnati. Easy. Easy. Janet just wants a card. Wants a card from me and wants a card from her boys. Not big on that. Chocolate, flower, dinner, date, and gift. I mean, if we can get quality time together, that's always the best thing. But she's not demanding of that, not expecting that. We tried to. We had some things happen this weekend, so we were unable to do so. But no, she's easy. Very, very easy. She just wants a card. And now he's come with a really nice set of flowers. Janet's not about chocolate. And she wants her boys to acknowledge it, too. Her two sons. As far as your situation, Scott, come on, bro. Happy wife, happy life. It's once a year, man. You just got to do it. Man up. Take care of your lady. Take care of your Valentine. DRod2203 tweets. There's one guy on my golf group text that has a Samsung, and all the videos sent on the text look like they're sent from a Razer phone. Every group has one. Every group has one. All right, so the XFL wrapped up its second week, and I'm not really sure it's still what I'm supposed to do with it. I mean, does anybody really know? The best thing that I can say about the XFL is it's still here. It has not folded. So that's something, I guess. Probably the most accurate thing I can say about it is it's like diet football. It's like Shasta Cola. It's like Thursday night football except on Saturdays and Sundays, and much, much worse with guys you do not know playing for teams you really don't care about. And it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, a league that's keeping the dream alive for NFL hopefuls, guys who just want to play some form of pro ball, is not worth hate. I mean, the NFL actually looks at it and can use it in terms of development and look at players. But the product itself right now is just not very good. I mean, I guess it'll get better. It can't get any worse. I mean, chasing a Patrick Mahomes Super Bowl comeback with a 44-yard passing performance from Matt McGloin is like going from a Wagyu steak to the Arby's drive-thru. And the question is, how long can such a drastic step down from what we're used to seeing last? And is bad football better than no football? Take the big head, the flight deck, out of the equation. I know he got over. Omaha! Speaking of McGloin, he had himself a day, right? Not a good one either. And it says something about the XFL that he was the number one headline coming out of week two. In case you missed it, which you probably did, McGloin was 5-for-13 with 32 yards passing, no TDs, and a pick heading into halftime against the DC Defenders. And since this is the XFL, they put a mic in his face before he hit the locker room, and here's what he told ESPN.
Matt, what does this team need to do on offense to get something going here?
We need to change the whole entire game plan at halftime.
What do you need to change about the game plan? What are you frustrated about?
There's just a lot going on right now. It's embarrassing for us here as an offense, so a lot of things we want to fix and correct.
Wow.
Yeah, things are not going so well for you, Matt, or for the entire team. What do you need to do going into the locker room? change the entire game plan.
Change the whole entire game plan at halftime.
Should have ran to the coach. Hey, coach, what do you think we have to change? We got to change the entire quarterback. Best part is ESPN ran those comments right back to the coach, Kevin Gilbride, who said, quote, need to go talk to him and figure out what the problem is because he needs to play better. So is there anything more XFL than a literal game of telephone between a head coach and a quarterback in the middle of the football game? Apparently there is, because then McGloin came out and threw a pick six on the very next drive, and then he was benched for Marquise Williams. And if that weren't enough, ESPN went back to clipboard McGloin in the middle of the fourth quarter to interview him yet again. And I mean, why the hell not? Not like he has to get ready to play, and you know he's going to have something to say. Here's what he had to say about his benching.
Well, I think we need to make a lot of adjustments, make a lot of changes. This is probably the worst, one of the worst games I've ever been a part of, you know, offensively. So it's back to the drawing board, back to square one. I mean, when you win like we did a week ago, it hides a lot of your problems. And you know, when you play a good team like D.C. today, you can get exposed very quickly like we did.
You say there's some issues going on. What stands out to you right now in terms of how this play calling is going?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on behind closed doors. You know, I think we need to clean that up. Communication especially is one. And it showed today, just at no point in time that I think we were comfortable out there. No point in time that I think we were in a position to try to be successful. So I think it was pretty easy to see.
You imagine an NFL quarterback ever saying something like that? It's so awesome. Not exactly the Patriot way, is it? Hey, whatever the Patriot way is, that's the opposite of the Patriot way. My man's just running people under the bus, pointing the finger at his coaching staff and his teammates and the system and the game plan. And it's awesome. I mean, that's like part football, part reality TV show. A bench quarterback alluding to issues inside the locker room while his team is on the field getting beat 21-0 in the second game of the year. Not a great look for McGloin. But then again, it is the XFL. And the stakes really aren't that high. And if he wasn't popping off and running his team and the coaching staff through the wood chipper, there'd be zero entertainment value in that entire game. Unless you got down and you won. So again, I've got no idea what to make of this other than it's probably not a great sign for that league when the most interesting story coming out of week two is a guy who went 8-for-19 with 44 yards, two picks, and two fiery interviews. I mean, if he didn't do those interviews, there's probably not even a reason to talk about the XFL today. And remember, we are in the dead of February when there's not a whole hell of a lot going on. Like, we're looking for things to talk about. And by the way, looking for anything football related. Then again, the real issue here isn't even McGloin. It's that everybody else playing quarterback in the XFL is playing like McGloin. He's not the only one. Through eight games, only one quarterback has passed for over 300 yards. And as a league, there have only been five more touchdowns than there have been interceptions. And the average points scored per team is 20. I thought that was one of the points of the XFL, right? They were going to make it as easy as possible for the offense to put up numbers so it'd be a lot of entertainment. Instead, what you're getting is like eight different versions of the Miami Dolphins. Well, minus the grit and heart that the Dolphins showed. It's not just that it's bad football. That'd be one thing, but it's boring football. And bad and boring are two things that the audience is not going to put up with. Not in 2020. Not when your options for entertainment, especially on the weekends, even this time of year, are pretty much limitless. And as you may have guessed, attendance and ratings drop from week one to week two. It was one thing when people show up in week one to see what it looks like and feels like, but can you hold that audience? They didn't. Now, I'm not going to write anything off after only 14 days, but now you see why last Monday I liked what I saw and I talked about what I liked, but I was hesitant to go all in. And I'm glad that I've still got some of my poker chips, unlike in my online gaming account where I'm down to $1. I kept the other poker chips in terms of the XFL, because while there were some people losing their minds after only a week, right now it looks like what it actually is. Bad minor league football. Maybe it'll get better. Maybe there's room for improvement. Hell, I'll say this. At least the LA Wildcats did not fire anybody this week. I mean, yes, they lost again. but nobody lost their job. So I guess there was one positive thing that came out from the XFL this weekend. Oh, that and the flight deck covering his bet. The Big Head is a big Matt McGloin guy. Defenders by 7. Hell, deck. Your QB1 there covered that by himself. Easy cover. I would not be taking a victory lap, bro.
We need to change the whole entire game plan at halftime.
That's a great XFL moment right there. What do you got to change? The whole game plan? The entire team? The entire roster? All my teammates have to find new jobs? Coaches too? Now we have to change a few things. We have to clean a few things up. We need to change the entire game plan. Like that thing that we worked on all week long? Crap. It's not working. Yeah, but if you spent the entire week working on it, and now you're going to have like 20 minutes at halftime, how are you going to change that whole thing? Well, we can't. We can change the quarterback, though. Or let him go out there for another series and throw a pick six, which is what happened. I think I've got time for maybe a phone call or so. Adam Hawk, I should check in with you really quickly, Adam. Just go ahead and put him on, man. Take your medicine. Bro, how was your weekend?
It was good. It was long. It was very tiresome. It was hard, but it was good.
All right, so when your idol went 31 on the front nine, what were you thinking on Thursday?
I was thinking 83. I was like, move over, Sam Snead. You're done. Get out of here.
Now I'm done.
Tiger Woods is going to be the number one all-time winningest golfer ever.
Dude, you sound somber.
Well, you know, he's got bad history at Riv, but he did debut there as a 16-year-old, so it would have been a storybook 83rd win, and it did not even come close
to
happening.
So what was it like to drag your entire family up there on Valentine's Day weekend and see your idol finish DFL?
So I'll say this. Taking my family there was an experience. There was a lot of good and there was a lot of bad. It was as hard, if not harder, than I thought it would be.
What did you expect? You got a three-year-old and a one-year-old.
Yeah.
At a golf tournament.
And we drove an hour to get there from Pasadena to Santa Monica. We parked. We got on a shuttle. We shuttled them 4 miles. We put them in strollers. We took them out to a golf tournament. As soon as they got out of the bus, my daughter looked at me and said, I don't want to walk. And so I was then carrying one. The other was in the stroller. My wife was like, not too thrilled to be at a golf tournament.
Again, dude, what did you expect? I don't mean that like rhetorically. I mean, really, what did you expect? Did you think it would go any other way than that?
I kind of thought like she would see this circus and be like, this is really cool. Instead, she saw the circus and she was like, man, she said this to me and I'm paraphrasing, but she was like, these people are dorks. Like, cause they all yell for Tiger the way I yell for Tiger. And like, these people are absolute dorks. But my daughter did throw out her hand twice for Tiger. Yelled Tiger Woods and he ignored her. So she takes right after me, which was great. And
Steal your idol after that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, discriminate,
he
Tiger.
He disrespected your 3-year-old daughter.
Yeah, but it was a good time. And
she'll never forget that, though, right?
Well, I'll remind her when I say your dad took you to see the GOAT, and, you know, no one can take that away from him. They saw the GOAT.
It sounds like it was the worst weekend they've ever had, all of them.
But it was the best weekend I've ever had, so it's a win for me.
It wasn't, though, Hawk. I mean, you don't even mean that. There's no way that was the best weekend you've ever had. I know you've had a miserable life, but if that was the best weekend you've ever had, when your idol finished DFL and your kids and wife was miserable, how can that be your best weekend?
Best weekend.
That's private.
Now you're done. That is private. No. My thanks to Marcus Howard, Mark Stein, Leonard Hamilton, and the XR4TI crew. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. We're out.